He always wore sheathed on his hip. The hilt of the heavy machete fitted into his palm like a dream of childhood. The sticky came down the slope toward him, gripping the useless firearm by the end of the barrel, swinging it onto its shoulder like a club.
Jack, use my blaster if I get in trouble.
Part of Ryan's mind was intrigued by the fact that the sticky was coming at him so hesitantly. All his experience with the breed had been that they were triple crazy fighters, rushing at any enemy with a screaming, blind hatred. Caution was out of the question.
You chilled meat!
Maybe.
Maggot food!
Sure. And you're 200 pounds of dog shit in a 50-pound sack.
The musket was swirling around in a maniacal circle, hissing like a runaway windmill. The mutie had the advantage of the higher ground, and Ryan realized that this wasn't going to be the slick and easy execution that he wanted.
Yes!
The mutie hissed out its warning as it suddenly charged. Its speed was alarming. Ryan barely had time to get the panga up to parry the blow. Ryan's arm was jarred clear to the shoulder by the force of the impact. The butt of the gun split lengthwise, exploding into white splinters. The power of the crushing attack sent Ryan off balance. The mutie dropped its broken gun and lunged, its suckered hands grabbing at Ryan's arm and neck. At such close contact, the long panga was useless, and Ryan dropped it, concentrating on trying to hold off the grappling hands. He'd seen plenty of the horrific injuries caused by stickies. Their palms and fingers had tiny mouth-like suckers, almost like those on the arms of an octopus, but with an inhuman strength. They would grip onto smooth surfaces like the armored flanks of war wags, enabling the stickies to climb effortlessly up the sides of speeding vehicles. It was when it came to sucking contact with human flesh that the power of the stickies was so truly appalling. Ryan remembered all of that and more in the jagged nanosecond before he and the mutie rolled in the dusty earth. Instantly there was pain, and a horrifying sound flooded his ears, coinciding with a burning sensation on his left wrist. Ryan realized that the noise was his skin being shredded by the sticky's fingers. He tried to ram his knee into his opponent's groin, but the creature clamped its thighs together, stopping him. With a great effort, Ryan succeeded in wrenching his left arm away, throwing several short stabbing punches into the mutie's midriff, solid thudding blows. The sticky wriggled a little away from him, giving Ryan a moment to gather breath. The thing's face was close, its open mouth snapping toward Ryan's cheek. The fetid, sour-sweet stench of rotten meat made Ryan gag. The sticky strained to reach him, and for a moment, the tip of its reptilian tongue brushed against Ryan's skin, almost making him yell out in revulsion. In a violent reflex, Ryan slammed his forehead into the sticky's face and felt the satisfying crunch of broken bone and pulverized cartilage. Blood gushed from its smashed nose into Ryan's own mouth, hot, salty, and with a slight undertaste of fish. The Oregon kiss was enough to make his opponent wrench away, hands up to its face.
I broke it, you fucker.
Ryan was aware of Jack and Christy dancing anxiously around the fringes of the fight, both holding blasters, waiting for a chance to take out the sticky. But both were aware of Ryan's warning about keeping the noise down in case of attracting other muties. A small, thin-bladed knife was in a sheath at the small of Ryan's back, a reserve weapon that he rarely needed to use. But he needed it now, and he slipped it into his hand. As the sticky rolled away, its bare feet digging in the sandy dirt for a purchase, Ryan went after it on hands and knees. His single eye burned with a ferocious bloodlust, and every part of his being was concentrated on killing the sticky. There was nothing on earth that would turn Ryan Cotter aside from his purpose once his heart was set on death. The mutie saw that in Ryan's face and tried to escape, blood streaking its mouth and chin, bubbling over its lips. It flailed helplessly away from him, holding out both hands in a kind of supplication. The knife darted in and out. Each coldly struck blow severed tendons in both wrists, so that the sticky, suckered fingers curled helplessly in on the palms.
Oh, yes.
The mutie made a last effort, trying for the top of the rise. But Ryan was on it, the wickedly slim flensing knife slicing through the tendons behind both knees. Now the crippled sticky was wriggling helplessly, thrashing like a gapped salmon, its mouth open and pink froth bubbling from its lips. The rest was easy. Ryan stood, conscious of pain from his left arm, blood dripping from the tips of his fingers. He flexed the hand, making sure there was no major damage done. The sticky half turned, so that its protruding eyes, watering with agony, drilled into Ryan's face. Beyond the awareness of defeat and imminent death, there was something more. Something that Ryan couldn't identify, but seemed bizarrely like a kind of triumph. Ryan stooped and drew the ice-sharp edge of the tempered blade across the mutie's throat, cutting deep, slow, and even. wiping the dulled steel on his shirt to clean it off. Ryan straightened.
Now what?
We'll go see JB and Mildred. Warn them that there's company in the hills.
Jack handed him the pistol, and Ryan holstered it, then picked up the panga and cleaned off the dirt on his pant leg. The two bodies were lying still, the spilled blood attracting a buzzing horde of speckled flies. Ryan slung the rifle across his shoulder and looked around the clearing. The surrounding forest was quiet as a tomb.
Let's go see the others.
He led the way to the top of the rise, where he could look into the hidden deeps of the Box Canyon. The day was fresh and clear, and he took in a long breath of the bright air as he reached the crest. From below, there was no clue that such a large valley lay beyond. It widened out, and Ryan could just see the glint of water through the scattered trees. There were the dark rectangles of old buildings with shadowed windows. A few horses grazed contentedly in a makeshift corral, and he could also see a dozen or more cattle on a gently sloping meadow.
There they are.
JB was barely 100 yards away from him, lying on his back, bare to the waist, his fedora covering his eyes. His chest was rising and falling with a steady regularity. Mildred was nearer the far end of the canyon, walking away from them toward the ruined buildings of the Anasazi.
Good thing we got here before the muties.
Yeah.
Even allowing for the fact that stickies couldn't normally shoot worth shit, with the long-barrel muskets, they could probably have picked off the sleeping figure of the armorer.
Looks like a true rustic idol down there, doesn't it, lover?
Yeah, whatever an idol is. JB will be real surprised when we tell him how close he came to buying the farm.
The trio stood close together, staring down into the canyon. Not one of them turned to look back along the trail, which turned out to be a triple bad mistake.
Don't turn around.
Ryan's right hand moved toward the holster on his hip.
I've got 8 blasters aimed at you people. Range is only 12 paces. You can all get to be real dead real quick. Hand away from the handgun, mister. Now, you best drop all the weapons you have in the dirt behind you. I see a big cannon on that snowhead kid.
Don't call me kid.
Jack made no effort to obey the command to drop his magnum.
I'll call you what I like, kid. Put down the 357, you little shit.
Do it.
Ryan unslung his rifle and laid it behind him without turning, then unholstered the Sig Sauer and put it beside the bolt-action Steyr.
Now the firehead.
Christy dropped her .38 beside the other blasters. It had briefly crossed Ryan's mind that whoever was there might be bluffing about the number of guns he had at his call, but you didn't survive in Deathlands by making wrong guesses in that kind of situation. The man would be a real stoop if he was bluffing. The voice didn't sound like it belonged to a real stoop, but it didn't sound like any sticky Ryan Carter had ever encountered.
Seems from the look of my brother's bodies that you got some blades around. Let's see them down. Going to be stripped bare naked in a while, so no point trying to be clever. Just another way of getting to be dead. Drop the knives.
Ryan let the 18-inch panga thunk into the ground behind him. Jack allowed one of his throwing knives to fall from his fingers.
Stickies or stoops? That what you figure? Maybe, maybe not. But I tell you something. This one isn't stoop. Men like you won't just carry one throwing blade and one butcher's axe between you. You gotta count of 5 to empty your pockets of the other knives. Then I put a round for the lady's knee. For starters.
Do it, Jack.
Ryan pulled out his own thin-bladed knife and watched more of the taped throwing blades appear by magic and join the armory behind them.
Real good.
Ryan looked across the open ground toward the ancient Pueblo ruins. Mildred still walked away from them, and JB was still fast asleep. If any of the group that now held them prisoner were to walk toward the top of the slope, then both JB and Mildred would be seen and quickly butchered.
Can we turn around now?
Sure, and come on down. You look like targets in a shooting gallery perched up there. What the hell is up there, anyways?
Just a sight more trees. The trail goes along the little stream, and looks like it fades away into nothing.
That's what I figured. Come on down, people.
They all turned and stepped over the blasters and knives, stopping in a line about 10 feet from their captors. There was a circle of 7 stickies, all holding muskets. The 8th was obviously their leader, the one who'd been doing all the talking. The others looked like the usual run of stickies, boggling eyes and lank hair, and the suckers visible on palms and fingers, bare feet. The leader was something else. He stood way over 6 feet, topping Ryan 6'2 by about 8 inches, and was so skinny that he looked like he would have to run around in a rainstorm to get himself wet. He wore a white shirt and an elegant brocade vest with dark blue jeans. A golden medallion hung around his lean neck. He was holding an Uzi machine pistol.